Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Being flexible is supposed to be a good thing, right? So why are so many hypermobile people dealing with chronic pain, instability, and injuries that don't really make sense? What if the very thing you were praised for, your flexibility, is actually the reason your body feels like it's constantly fighting to keep up? Today, we're talking about hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and why the solution isn't stretching more. It's learning how to stabilize and support your body properly. Tanya Zhuge is back. She's a doctor of physical therapy and the founder of Tonic Physical Therapy. And she's here to discuss both of those with us. So hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And so she specializes in helping people who feel like their bodies are unpredictable, especially those with hypermobility, learn how to build strength, stability, and confidence in how they move. So it's really good to see you. It's been a while, but so happy to have you back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and to speak a little bit about something that honestly, a lot of people don't know a lot about, because it's not necessarily something that shows up on an x-ray or on an imaging, MRI or anything like that. And it's something that a lot of people deal with. Now, we often think that hypermobility is a great thing. You have that friend whose palms can touch the ground with their knees straight, and you think it's like a great thing. However, this thing, this hypermobility, or in the past people have called it double jointedness, is a condition where the joints actually move beyond their normal range of motion. A lot of dancers and athletes actually benefit because they're able to perform certain things that other people are not able to do. And we think it's great, and it is great, and it's beautiful, and all of that. But because they have this extra mobility, they often have more, their joints sort of slosh around through their lifetime a lot more than the average person. And so after a while, things get irritated, and then they actually become tight in places because the body is trying to create and establish some control. And they get into a cycle of irritation, and maybe even their joints eroding more easily as they get older. So I'm here to speak a little bit about how to manage these things and how to think about them a little more differently.
Amazing. I'm excited to get into that. Can you define both hypermobility and then the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome?
So hypermobility is just basically a condition where your joints will move beyond their normal range of motion. Often, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, there's 13 different types of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and 12 of them can be diagnosed with a genetic test. However, the most common form of it actually has no genetic tests, and it takes an assessment by a doctor generally to look at, like, there's something called the Brighton test where, you know, you can touch your forearm with your thumb, or your pinky can bend backwards 90 degrees, your elbows sort of hang backwards, your knees hyperextend. But it also affects things like your vascular system, your skin mobility, and all sorts of other things. It's actually a connective tissue disorder, which can lead to many things. Say people often have a family history of it. There's a 50% chance of having it if one of your parents had it. And it tends to affect females 9 to 1 over males.
Wow. Okay. And so why is it really hard to diagnose something like that?
Yeah. You know, society thinks it's so a great thing when you're so flexible, but being too flexible is just as bad as being too inflexible. Because your joints, like, think about your ligaments as rubber bands that hold the joints together, and they sort of snap back when we, you know, we might stretch or elongate and come back, and those ligaments come back and tighten and hold your joints and support your joints. Well, when you have something like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome or hypermobility, those rubber bands are like loose around your joints. So over time, you know, it can be very challenging because you can be very likely to injure if you're working in end ranges that you cannot control.
Right.
And that's why it's really important to work on stability and control. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, or is it true that hypermobile people get injured more often or feel like their body might be constantly out of balance or out of place?
Yes. And it tends to happen, I think, a little later on in life, too, because at first they can pop in and out of, you know, in and out of their joints into these excessive ranges without having necessarily pain from it, you know, but as they age or as they do this consistently over their life, they lose their proprioception, their connection with their body, and they actually injure those ligaments more and more over time when they're overstretching them. So for those people, they should actually work on mid-range control activities, and they should actually have a stability in their workout, and they should not push those end ranges of motion.
Okay. So a lot of hypermobile people are literally told to stretch more or go to yoga, right? And so what you're saying is that going to make things worse?
It definitely can. Now, I'm a big fan of yoga because very often you're holding these isometric positions, which can create a lot of stability in the body and be good for you. But if you're pushing your end ranges, especially when you're hypermobile, then that's not a good thing for you to do. It's good to work in the mid ranges and to maybe back off. You know, if you can stretch, you know, this much, you know, maybe consciously just go this much and work on holding those ranges of motion, because flexibility does not equal stability.
Right. I think that's the misconception. I look around my yoga class and here I am standing in this little tree pose and my knee is barely flexing and going out, you know, and there's these other people that have their legs straight out to the side. And it makes me feel like I'm like almost less than, like I'm not doing it as well because my body's not opening up as well as someone else's. And so I really appreciate you having this conversation because it makes me feel like it's just every body is created so differently. And maybe my body can't do that stuff.
Yeah. And it shouldn't necessarily do that stuff either.
Right.
You know, if you're someone who's very, very stiff, you know, you perhaps yoga is very good for you to work on those end ranges as long as it's not painful, you know. But if you're someone who's hypermobile, you don't want to loosen up. You don't want to overstretch those ligaments that already have that issue. You know, you can think of it, you know, as kind of like driving a car with a loose steering wheel. And if you do too much of it, you know, it can be very exhausting and it takes a whole lot of attention to drive that car with that loose steering wheel. So over time, you have to also watch endurance activities. It seems that from my experience with patients, it seems that a lot of the hypermobile people that I see, they seem to like these long endurance type activities, repetitive activities. And they, I don't know, they seem to be, I don't have any research for this, but they seem to be very, just very active people who like to move and who like to do things all the time. But for them, they also have to watch, you know, the amount of endurance activities that they do so that their body has enough time to recover from, you know, from and stabilize after working it so hard with that loose steering wheel.
Totally. Yeah. So if stretching then isn't the answer, what does a hypermobile body need to feel safe and supported?
You have to balance with strength, control, and recovery time. So if you're working, you know, for long periods of time doing these repetitive activities or these in-range activities, you have to limit those. And then you actually have to give the collagen enough time to recover because your collagen is looser than other people's collagen. And you have to do things that support that collagen, muscle building type activities, stability, Pilates types activities, where you're focusing on mid-range activities.
How long does it take for the collagen to repair?
Well, that's a good question. There's many different types of collagen. The studies do show that hypermobile, there's something called fibroblast, and those are the cells that rebuild your collagen. And the studies do show that for hypermobile people, our collagen takes a longer period to repair than the average person does, you know? So that's why it's really important. It's almost like you have a weekly movement budget and you don't want to spend it all on repetition. And And it can be very hard to work. If you're a very active person who likes to move, it can be very difficult to rest and to, you know, to just allow yourself that time. But if you want your body to last and to function well, you're going to need more recovery time and you're going to need to do more strength building activities. It's not just what you do, but it's how often and how long you do it.
Interesting. I feel like you're calling me out. I was in my 30s and I loved running, like obsessed, just every single day. I would do 7 to 10 kilometers and then eventually my IT band and like everything just started hurting. And then I couldn't do it anymore because I wasn't resting. I wasn't strength training. And I just kept pounding on my poor body, my muscles, ligaments, tendons, joints. And it was because I didn't enjoy those other activities. But I feel like balance would have helped me. And I'm still struggling with those parts of my body because of what I did, the neglect that happened. So I think it's so important.
Yeah, it's so much more important to train stability and not just stamina. And stamina can feel good if you're an endurance athlete and you're, you know, used to running and getting the high from endorphins and all of that. But it's the control that matters more than the endurance and more than the range. And you have to take care of your body and give it that support. And if you don't, it's a kind of a funny it's a funny thing that happens is even the hypermobile body starts getting tight if you're doing too much because something in it will try to tighten up to stabilize like an IT band. Or other things. I myself have hypermobility and I've had about 3 shoulder dislocations and a hip dislocation in the last 7 years. You know, I also tend towards that place where I just want to move and not stop. And it's been challenging to learn not to do that, but injury is a very good teacher.
That's a fact. Absolutely. What about, you know, hypermobility? It leads to pain. But I also imagine that it is also hard on the nervous system. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. There's so much information. That exhaustion of constantly, we spoke about it early, of constantly having to like monitor your body to make sure that it's in the right place and of driving that car with the loose steering wheel really sort of like heightens the anxiety in the system. And there's actually studies that show, you know, that hypermobile people often can have a anxiety component. And part of it is because they're having to manage that extra stress of those, that machine with all the little loose nuts and bolts, you know, that are shaking and moving a little more than normal over time. So there is sort of a heightened response in the nervous system. There's even a mast cell, you know, that mast cells are the inflammatory cells that occur when histamine is released into your body and you have these inflammatory processes. And there's even heightened mast cell activity in people with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome who are having to manage these things that are happening to them all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Tanya, if someone is listening and they're like, this sounds exactly like me, what should they do next? Where do they start?
It's a good question. Where do they start? The hardest part is, you know, just realizing what you're doing, mapping it out and realizing that you may have to change your whole scheme at life and your whole scheme at your workouts of what, you know, you need to do. But I would like assess what your activities are in like an entire week. You know, if you're someone who lives in New York, like I do, if you're walking, you know, 8 miles a day, or which is not unheard of here, you know, and then you're going to yoga class and then you're running 3 times a week, you know, look at your whole schedule and assess it and make sure that you're not doing too much endurance activities. Make sure that when you're doing a yoga class that you maybe back off 10% in terms of the range of motion that you're doing. It's a little bit in everyday life. Even the way you're standing and the way you're holding things, you know, it's a lot of self-awareness. You know, am I hyper extending my knees when I'm standing for 2 hours while I'm working? Am I overextending my elbows? You know, am I doing party tricks for people every weekend? You know, my hypermobile body. So it is all encompassing to, you know, your whole schedule of life. But if you take a look at those things, it's not like you have to stop everything. You just have to bring in a little bit more control and back off on a few things. And that can make a big difference in your, you know, in your life and your body and how you, and those muscles and other things in your body tightening up and causing pain and inflammation.
Yeah, for sure. That's really great advice. What would be one thing that you would want hypermobile people to know about their body that might completely change how they see themselves? Is there anything that, I don't know, there's a light bulb that might cause a light bulb moment for people? Maybe they don't know.
A light bulb moment for people. Everything you're doing that is repetitive and endurance-based, you're reinforcing instability. So again, you have to balance that with strength, control, and recovery. Less repetition often means more control.
Right. Absolutely. So tell us about your experience. Like, what is it? Have you had a lot of experience with this type of thing with your own body? And have you learned recovery in your own way?
Especially in the last few years, it seems to have gotten worse. You know, like I've had more occurrences of the subluxations and the dislocations. And what's really tricky about it, like, I know my body really well. I'm a physical therapist. I train other people. And it's really weird how quickly it can sneak up on you. And out of nowhere, you can get a subluxation, you know, and even when you are aware, again, it's again like driving that car with the loose steering wheel, you know, and then suddenly something just kind of blows, you know. My most recent experience was with the shoulder subluxation. And it just kind of happened out of nowhere. And it didn't happen in this dramatic way where I was in an accident or anything like that. And I realized I had been doing one particular movement that may have exacerbated, you know, the motion or helped it come out. But it was just like a slight click. And then everything was, you know, not where it was supposed to be. And I sort of pushed it back in and taped my shoulder for 4 weeks, you know. And what's amazing, okay, this happened about 10 weeks ago, and I'm still managing the irritation from that injury today.
Right.
I've had to, you know, and I'm very careful about how I sleep and how I support the arm and what motions I do. And I've regained about 80% of my activity, but I still forget sometimes and I quickly reach for something in this direction and I'm not lifting anything heavy. I'm just going to that end range where after the injury, I haven't really stabilized and I shouldn't be activating in that end range. And my body reminds me with a quick jolt, like, hey, that was not great. But I'm even still surprised that it's been 10 weeks and just a light, quick movement in my end range and external rotation, you know, gives me a little jolt, like a little reminder that, hey, you're not supposed to be there, you know, stop doing. So it can be exhausting. And what other choice do you have except to manage it? And if I didn't know the information that I know, I can't imagine trying to manage this on my own without needing some help. And I've had a little help from another therapist who's done some soft tissue work and has helped to normalize some of the things that had gotten tight around the shoulder and had caused it to sort of push out in a certain direction. So that's been very helpful, you know, to have someone else look at me and actually help release some of the restrictions that led to the hypermobility in a different direction.
Yeah, we often don't realize that were bracing, changing movements because of accommodating some kind of discomfort. You know, we just go about our daily life kind of like Groundhog Day sometimes, and we don't really realize what we're doing to our bodies. So I think it's important to slow down. And man, I mean, I'm not good at it either. Like injury, looking after injury, it's so hard because I'm an active person, like just like you. I like to stay active and continue doing what I like to do. And resting can be so challenging sometimes. Does age have anything to do with it becoming worse? Like I've been seeing all these memes, you know, someone bending over and they throw out their back. Like, is age related at all? Does anything?
It's the repetitive load distribution that you do on a daily basis. So when you've been doing that for 50 years versus 20 years, you know, there's a buildup of more wear and tear. Plus, you know, as you get older, like women lose estrogen and your tissues aren't as soft and recoverable as they are, you know, used to be. The estrogen in a woman's body, even they're finding lately, even affects their ability to build muscle, you know. So absolutely age contributes to it, but also the lifetime of those loose screws everywhere, you know, and that little extra movement that's been happening with everything you do does lead to a little bit more of wear and tear and erosion in the joints than if you had tighter ligaments that were holding you nice and securely your whole life.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. Tanya, is there anything else that we missed? Is there anything you want to add about either of those topics?
Well, I just want to mention that the Mayo Clinic just started a hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome section just in the late 2000s. You know, they interviewed about 5,000 people who just thought they might be hypermobile or thought they might have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, you know, and they're creating a whole bank of information based upon those people. So definitely seek out, you know, resources on hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. There's actually not a ton out there, you know, right now, but people are beginning to become aware and are starting to provide resources for patients with hypermobility. Again, it's not something you really see on an x-ray or imaging, so you're not imagining it. Don't let people convince you that you're imagining it, because you're not. It's a real thing. And thankfully, it's getting a bit more traction lately, and find providers that are aware of, you know, of these issues and know how to support you, and not the ones who roll their eyes or think you're making something up, you know.
So that I literally, that's happened so many times, and we have to really for ourselves. And I love that you're really bringing this to light. I think awareness is the first piece in all of this, and then normalizing it. So tell everybody more about the work that you do and where people can find you.
Hey, so I have a boutique practice in New York City. It's called Tonic Physical Therapy, and I work one-on-one with patients for an entire hour. That's what I do. And that's not the norm. You know, normally you will go to a PT clinic and they're scheduling 4 people an hour and you're getting 10 minutes with a therapist. There are a few people who are doing what I'm doing. And so I would encourage you to find me or find someone else who's going to actually spend some time with you and work with you, listen to you, and work with you around your issues. I do a lot of soft tissue and manual work, and I combine it with functional exercises that are paired perfectly with the manual work that is needed for your body.
Amazing. Well, like I said, I think the work that you're doing is a phenomenal and really forward thinking. Like, just, I love that you're talking about these things that not everybody is. So thank you so much for coming on the show and for bringing this to light. It may give people that, oh, this is me moment, you know, and then they can start changing the way that they do things and feel better.
I hope so. You know, and I hope we can shift the culture from one of pushing through to listening to your body and working with your body and giving it what it needs.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks again for being here. It was so much fun talking to you again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. If you've ever felt like your body didn't make sense and you're doing all the right things, but you're still struggling, then this conversation was exactly for you. Your body isn't broken, it just needs a different kind of support. So we'll have Tanya's information in the show notes so you can learn more about her work and how to start building that strength, stability, and trust into your body again. If you think that this episode would benefit anyone else in your life, please send it to them so they too can start building the strength and recovery that they need in order to live and thrive. Stay tuned for the next episode. Until next time, bye everyone.